Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views, as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
So when you brought up Sajay Rai, from a leadership standpoint and what we were talking about from an ownership standpoint, the first event I ever attended was a HMG CIO summit.
Okay, yeah.
And when I walked into the room that night, I had only been working for the company for 2 months, 3 months. I walked into the reception that was held the night before, and I'm looking around the room. I don't know a single person. People have drinks, grabbing appetizers. And here comes this person walking right up to me, looks at my name tag and goes, Brian Schnabel? I'm like, Schnabel, Brian Schnabel. He's, hi, Sajay. Nice to meet you. What do you guys do? And I start explaining. He goes, I've seen the name. I've been interested in finding out more, but how long have you been there? And I'm like, you know, month, two. He goes, oh, let me walk you around and introduce you to some people.
That's Sajay through and through.
Right.
He's amazing.
Walks me around, starts to introduce me to people, right? Just being nice and friendly. And then the next day walks up to my table just to ask me how everything was going. Right. And I was like, you talk about like that. And people, Eric, I'm sure you and Dan, now that you got to know me, other people would probably look at me and be like, oh, well, Brian would have no problem walking into a room of people. No, maybe not by the look on my face, but internally my heart is pumping, right? Like right. I am nervous. How do I approach that? His approach to it, right, was very much like, and I was like, oh, this one of the nicest guys I met, right? And then I get to learn his background. Well, because what's the first thing I do then afterwards? Go look him up on LinkedIn, start to find out more about him. The next day I get to see him up on stage leading a discussion, right? And I'm like, this is a very interesting person. And he's somebody within the community, right? So he's held a position before where he was a CISO. So when we were going back to the topic of vCISO or fractional CISO, do you have to have experience? Kind of up for debate, because I'm sure his experience comes from years before things moved to the cloud.
Right.
Right.
Let me start with the catalyst for this, because I think it's really interesting the way this particular thing was phrased. This is a tweet that came out May 31st, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But the idea was, in other news, name a better way to get into the field of cybersecurity and start building experience than learning and studying what it takes to become a CISO, then become a vCISO, remote part-time CISO, pro bono for a small mom and pop business part-time. You just need to find a company that lacks any formal security program and explain to them your willingness to create one for them for free and manage it. By doing this, you'll be able to start gaining experience as a vCISO and use it on your LinkedIn and resume. Thankfully, I was given an opportunity to be a vCISO for a local business and have been able to provide value in terms of improving asset management and conducting a formal risk assessment. If you can't find any companies that'll give you a chance, then just set up an LLC and put that you are a vCISO for a confidential company until you find one that takes on your service offerings. You'll technically still be a vCISO in the interim, just one without clients. After gaining some experience and ironing out the bugs in your methodology, you'll be able to leverage your first few volunteer clients for endorsements and recommendations in order to gain legitimate paying clients down the road. And there's a couple of more lines, but the first paragraph I don't have a problem with.
Since we're talking about Twitter, for those that are listening to this in the future, do we have to mention that tweet came through in the pre-Elon Musk ownership model? Or do we need to give that context? No, too soon?
Yeah, we don't know what that's going to turn into.
It's interesting. I look at that and, you know, kind of the same reaction from you. Like, okay, you don't have the experience. I'm going to go gain the experience conceptually, right? I'm there. I like that idea. But then you get into the meat of it that, oh, just create a fake company called Confidential. So wait, we're talking about an industry that is now based on confidentiality, trust, privacy, all of these different things. And now you're going to start a relationship based on false trust, based on a false narrative?
It's really interesting because it's the old adage of fake it till you make it, but done at a level and at a role that expects some level of experience and expertise. I don't go and try, you know, there's, and of course there are comments below and there's tons of comments. There's some really good ones, but there's ones like, you know, one that portray this in its right perspective, which is, I think I'd like to be a surgeon. I'm setting up a hospital now and I'll be the head of surgery for my own hospital.
That is hilarious because that is the exact same context that I thought about when I read this, was the medical field and creating this. That, oh yeah, I could do surgery, right? I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express. I'm good. But it's interesting though, because I think about, so I'm going to go back to what Brian was talking about and pick on Sajay a little bit. You know, Sajay being a fractional CISO, where did he come from? He had a very established audit consultancy firm. Like that's what he's done for a long time. Mm-hmm. Audit is a great tangential. It's a building block into security because a lot of what we do is built on a lot of different frameworks and all of that. So it really helps provide some context. So I think to say that, well, I've been in audit for so long, now I'm going to build vCISO on top of it, to me, that's a natural extension. And I think we've always talked about this in the context of this. We think about security, that some of the best practitioners didn't really come up through security. Because let's be honest, you know, going back to the conversation on college degrees and all those things, mm-hmm. a college degree in security is a rather new concept. So right. Some of the best practitioners to date have had tangential areas of expertise that they've taken and they use that as a bedrock to then build their security acumen on top of that. But they had that anchor point to build up. This notion of, I'm just going to start greenfield into the security realm and just make it work. There's a lot at stake. I mean, as we look at it, I mean, pick on SolarWinds, right? And I believe the conversation's still going on personally holding the CISO liable. Yep. For what happened.
Yeah, there's a couple of cases. And there's actual personal accountability that's coming out. It was SolarWinds, and there's another one in which they are, it was Uber.
Uber.
Oh, that's right.
The former Uber CISO is now being brought back into the discussion despite having left to document and call out the way that things were happening in order to determine personal liability. So there is no end. This is not just, I'm going to come in and talk to you. You're actually going to get some direct accountability that goes along with it. And I do wonder if people making some of these decisions understand that. Heck, I wonder if some people in titled, experienced CISO roles truly understand it either. But I think right. because it's a continually changing mark.
Well, and I think one of the things that's playing into this more and more and more, and not to shift gears in conversation, is the insurance side of it, right? Because they're, from a culpability standpoint, then it's, well, really, what are we responsible for, right? From the insurance side. But going back, two things. One, on the VC, I was trying to find it because I knew I had liked it somewhere. When we got into the conversation around VC, so fractional CISO the other night before getting on this morning, I literally had seen a post on LinkedIn and it was a humorous post, right? This wasn't somebody poking fun at the VC, so world, but he said, I spent the last 24 hours working with my son on explaining the need for MFA, right? And two-factor authentication. He goes, I'd be happy to say, and he went through like all the different accounts that his son has now set it up on. And his son was now teaching a friend later that day about it. He goes, I have officially added vCISO to my title. Right. And I was like, it was cute.
Is this
right?
Serious or was this?
No. Like it was serious that he really did this for his son, but he was using that as adding vCISO to my title.
I taught one person, therefore I'm a vCISO.
Right. But he was being like, there was other, you know, professionals that commented and they're like, absolutely, way to go. And, you know, it takes one person, you know, one person can help change the perspective of somebody young, can change the perspective of so many people. So it was just him kind of, you know, joking about what he had done at home. And he called himself the vCISO of his household. Right. And I was like, that was really cute. But at the same time, we were having the discussion about how that title, how people are trying to jump on the bandwagon of how can we monetize this? And it brought me back also to the book, Dan, the three books I put out there, and you said you should read This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends. Mm-hmm. And in those first few chapters, it's somebody who's trying to figure out how to monetize, you know, they bought a business in security and trying to monetize it. And the way they were going about it was people that would report 0 days, and it became very profitable until all of a sudden the people that were reporting the 0 days realized that this 0 day that I was getting 5,000 for, maybe I can get 150,000 for. So that your entire business model becomes harder and harder because all you were doing was buying what somebody else was already finding and creating, right? So in where I'm going with this from the whole VCSO side, to try to just to jump on the bandwagon and monetize, because you do realize that there's a ton of companies out there that A, have risk, and I can just go in and hopefully offer insight and learn on the fly. You're talking about somebody's baby, right? Like business. Like this isn't just learning on the fly.
And there's some huge ramifications. You know, thinking about it, I'm gonna do the automotive reference before Brian can get there. So if you think about the security frameworks that are being pushed down from OEMs to tier ones and then tertiary, kind of the different tiers of other manufacturers, right? So the biggest one right now is OEMs are pushing down TISACs, TIPSR. There's a couple different frameworks in there to the tier ones, but the expectation is that's gonna flow down to some of the smaller companies, right? Mm-hmm. You take one of those smaller companies and insert this model that's being purported of somebody that really doesn't know what they're doing. And the company then feels that they are good, right? That we're compliant because this person we found told me I'm compliant. We meet all of these. Something happens. And then all the way from the OEM down looks at it and goes, you weren't compliant with everything or with anything, right? You gave us a false narrative. You answered incorrectly. You run the risk, and I'm not saying this is played out or this is the response we would take, but in theoretical terms, they could cease to become or cease to be a company because now that relationship is built on mistrust. And therefore, well, if I can't trust you to answer this correctly, why would I trust you for anything else critical to the business? And if they don't have that pipeline anymore, you may have inadvertently just put a bunch of people out of work. Now, granted, this is kind of taking it to the nth degree, but it can be very dangerous. And thinking about as attacks continue to evolve in the OT world, we're talking safety as well on the plant floor with some of the machinery as we go to Industry 4.0 and the connected there that a company may think they're well protected and they could have a gaping hole that leads to, you know, think about in our world. You know, I remember seeing we've got a robotic arm that's moving truck axles, right, from different places. Well, it's always kind of put in the context. Well, what happens if I could tell that truck or that arm, throw that truck axle, right? You could put that through a wall or something. I mean, the stakes are extremely high.
Yeah. And before we go any further, I want to take just a second. We never really talked about what a VCSO is or the concept. So for people listening that aren't, you know, the idea here is that there are companies that don't need a full-time CISO, or that are not, you know, they're growing, they're not big enough, they aren't ready, they need advisory, but don't necessarily can't afford or have a, or bring in or afford to have somebody come in full-time to do that chief information security officer role. So over the past number of years, there's been this rise toward, I think the better term is fractional CISO. Although fractional CISO maybe is the untainted version of this in terms of terms, VCSO has taken on a bit of a different spin as more and more people have gone toward it. But fractional CISO, the idea that someone with a significant amount of experience comes in and decides to help multiple smaller organizations in an on-demand type capability where they can ask questions. It's like advisory. It's like having your own Forrester advisor, CISO, that is on an extension of your staff, preferably not one that's also selling products or doing other things, but can truly be your the version of a contracted version of what a CISO would be if they were on staff. And you know, there's been this industry has been around for a while, probably 5, 7, 10 years, but really has bloomed lately around, especially because things like insurance, Brian, you mentioned, and others are starting to require that you have a CISO. We're seeing this also in the SEC and FTC guidance that's coming up, that you need a chief information security officer. and there are less and less people doing it, qualified to do it. And therefore now you need to, and therefore prices are going up. So those that have smaller organizations are finding really great resource in VCSOs. This is also somebody that will have to talk to the board. This is also somebody that will talk to customers. This is also somebody that will be accountable when something happens to the organization if you're in that named role. So it's quite an important role and one that continues to grow. But let me take a different spin on this and say for decades, we've been getting information security consulting, management consulting from outside consulting organizations. And the people doing the bulk of the work are fresh out of college associates, consultants that come in, they do an analysis, they do the work. It's overviewed by a partner or by somebody higher up in the organization, in the consulting organization, to make it, make sure it's on point. But generally, by and large, the work is done by lower level, lower experience people, and that's how they get some of their experience. So is this that chance? Is this the parallel to that in the security leadership role?
Right. I'm glad you put it into context, because when you mentioned virtual CISO, I was actually thinking that we were virtualizing you, Dan. So you're going to be like Siri or Cortana.
Max. Yeah. I'm Max Hedren. Well,
we now have a Microsoft chatbot that's a CISO that can help you become compliant. No, it's saying that
Microsoft is not a security company.
Ouch. Hey, I want to go tangential real quick, and I'm going to go back to Brian's story on Sajay. It just, something popped into my head.
Are we going to have to pay licensing rights to Sajay?
I think we're going to have to. I'll give him a big hug after this. But I was thinking about that story that you were talking about, Brian, and what happened at the SIM with SIM and HMG, that I like to draw back to those that are listening that are trying to either get into the field or new in the field, the importance of networking. And that's exactly it. Look at what Sajay was able to do in that space, that knowing that the Detroit CIO group pretty well, it's a pretty tight knit group. They all know each other. So reading that room, I could imagine there was a bunch of different pockets of conversations that were going on, that for you to step up, Brian, and step into any one of those conversations was a more protracted kind of explaining who you are, building up your own trust, and having to direct them away from their current conversations. But Sajay, who is a longstanding member in that group, because you right away created a network with him, was able to cut through all the noise and was able to make those introductions very quickly. Networking is super important to being able to move around the field, navigate, not only for learning, but finding your next job. It allows you to connect. Detroit is a very close-knit group, not standoffish, but close-knit, but sometimes it can feel a bit daunting to break into the group. And that's where networking and using somebody to kind of navigate those waters really helps out. Sorry for
going no problem. And one thing I want to toss on there, and this goes to even to the VCSO side, is you, let's say, came from a background as a CISO and now you're giving people advice. What you just said about Sajay, from where he, from the business that he's grown and transpired and continues to aspire to be, very, very humble. Never once when he was walking me around that room in terms of interrupting a conversation, did I ever feel like I was trying to figure out who is this nice person who's taking me around. And when he would somewhat interrupt a conversation or introduce me, it wasn't, I am this person. And Eric, we talked about this before. People that have been in this field for 3-4 years and see a little bit of success and then get almost an ego to themselves.
Right.
Right. To make sure that ego stays down, right? Flatten it out, right? Like a pancake, has some humility, right? And remain humble.
Right.
And that goes back to, we were talking about it earlier. The idea of extreme ownership is what leads to extreme leadership.
100%. So pivoting back to the VC, so I want to make sure kind of as we explore this and talk through, you know, as I mentioned about the stakes are high, I don't want to make this come off as, you know, kind of this chest thumping that look at us, our job is so important, nobody else can do it. That's not it at all. I think the three of us have been in the field long enough and seen the trajectory that we're on and what's going on, and realize that the table stakes, that it's, they are really high, that there's some really big ramifications on a personal, on a company level that could happen, that to just jump in and say, well, this looks cool, I'm going to do this. Heed the warning, right? That fully understand what you're getting into before you try to make that move, and make sure you're doing it in a way that protects yourself, protects your clients. Because naturally, as I think about this, and I actually, there's been some companies that have popped up in the VCSO world, realizing that the number of clients they could take on far outpaces the amount of time they have as an individual to give all of those individual companies. But what I've started to see is some of the VCSOs have taken early on practitioners under their wing and said, all right, I'm going to insert you into this company to do this part-time, but it's going to be under my guidance. So it's almost like, as we go back to the trades,
it's an apprenticeship.
Yes. I think that is the right way to do it. That's a great way to do it.
I'm a huge fan of that. And you know, and I come, by the way, it's just for clarity, I come out of 3 years of doing exactly this kind of VCSO work. And have done exactly that. And I love it because it gives people the ability to test the waters of a different field, especially if they're coming out of one industry to another, get some time in a different area, in a different space, in a different topic inside information security, and grow over time. But you do have to pay, I'm trying to make sure I don't use the phrase pay your dues, because it's not paying your dues. I think you have to see and get some level of experience in order to truly understand a topic before you can help advise others. Because in reality, at that point, you are, if you're not an expert in the topic, or at least I'm paying for consulting. If I'm a business owner, I'm paying for consulting. I want somebody that has 90% of it, 80% of it, that can give it to me efficiently, especially if I'm paying hourly. I want to make sure that time is used well. I'm not paying for somebody to go out and do research and learn it on my dime.
Right.
Yes, there's going to be things that not everybody will know everything. And so you're going to have to do, we know that's going to come the case. But if everything is coming without any experience, or without somebody to help guide the person who you've inserted to help do that, then it becomes almost inefficient at that point. And not necessarily as valuable to the customer as it could have been.
Right. And I'll pick on myself, right? As I look at early on in my career, my perspective versus now, and I'm going to draw it back to PPT, baby. People, processes, technology.
Oh, right? I thought you were going to talk about PowerPoint.
Yeah, the PowerPoint extension. Well, I think, is it PPTX now? I think they might have changed it with Office 365, but as we nerd out.
So. And yes, it is PPTX now.
There you go. So see, we've still got some of those technical backgrounds. I think that's where our depth stops.
Yeah, as right managers, now. PowerPoint is now the extent of our capability.
Spreadsheets, email, PowerPoint, we're great at it. That's.
But yet we need really big computers to do that.
So as I think about it now, and we've talked about people, processes, technology, and that is a three-legged stool and how important that is. And I think the three of us, we talk about it in the context that people and processes are first now. Right. And then technology follows. But I'll tell you, early in my career, as I was starting to look at some of these technical controls, what did I lead with?
Technology.
I reversed the whole model, right? Because as technologists, when you're entering the field, that's the cool part of it. You haven't seen enough to understand how to work with people. And I'm not saying this I'm exclusive to everybody, right? Because everybody's got a different path on how they got there. And certainly, but just looking, reflecting on my own way of going about meeting some of these control frameworks, that technology was naturally where I gravitated to. It was the cool blinky light that, oh, look, we can get a dashboard and it does all of these different things. It checks this box, but how do you manage it? How do you know that it meets your risk objectives? How do you know that it is rolled out across the organization? All of those different answers. Do you even have the team to actually rally behind it, right? All those questions that you have to answer up front before going into even getting into the technology. So I think it's a bit of a perspective. And as I look back now, if you would have asked me in the moment, I would have, I got this figured out. I can do this. And then, so, you know,
I want to
luckily I got the, I was going to say, luckily I got the blessing of Rich Hook, who like ground that into me every day. People processes technology and change that perspective. And, you know, thankfully got me to this point.
Well, he's going to say, I want to take what you just said, because I think that's so like important for any leader, right, to really understand is the people part, right, and the process. So you were talking about the technology, the blinky lights, like the cool stuff. If you're a virtual CISO, so one comment you made, Eric, was in regards to like an apprenticeship, like how important it is to get more people into security, understanding the leadership role or making decisions or how businesses work, right? But also as a fractional CISO, and Dan, I'd be very open to hear your opinion on this, that when you're coming in to advise an organization, right, on their security practices, if you haven't worked with people, right, or set up teams, right, that manage those businesses or processes, coming in to understand their business and their process, right, or how their current process operates, when you're looking at technologies, Eric, that you're going to put in, like you said, do you even have the people to be able to manage that? Because one of the first things that you might discover is, well, one, you don't have a team to be able to manage all the things you need to do. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to build a team. And me as the VC, so I'm not in charge of managing that team long-term. So you need to have somebody in mind either today or in the future to manage people. And if you're going to bring in people, right, wouldn't you want that person to hire the people he thinks are either A, necessary, or B, that would encompass that team, right? Because it really comes down, you could start to be as a VC, so bringing in the certain products and everything else, and then say, hey, you're going to need four or five people. And a year later, they're like, perfect, we found a guy, they pull him in, you leave. 2 years later, they're calling you back because they're like, well, the entire team left, nobody got along, we own these five products, now what do we do, right?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Yes, that's ideal. But also think about the types of companies that mostly use VCSOs are, I'll just talk about the demographic of the companies that I was working with, which were early stage startups, pre-A, and you know, late A type companies. They weren't huge, some 10 to 40 people total, including all the development team and the sales team and the back office support staff. So, you know, those aren't necessarily organizations that are going to get to the multi-person security team anytime soon. So, you know, there's a point in which you say, I do need to do some tactical work and I need to figure out this comes back to delaying until things are just perfect rather than finding what's good right then. So I think in many cases, you have to make the decision for the right now. And I agree that it's people-based and process-based before it's technology-based, even more so in those organizations, because they can't necessarily afford the technology that it takes, you know, that bigger companies would just go out and buy to solve a problem. You have to be much more creative and you have to be able to support it and it has to be able to work in. And this is where things like, you know, all those wonderful, you know, forms that talk about segregation of duties and other things just don't work. That you, because you cannot follow those things in those smaller organizations, because you only have one person that does technology and security plus an advisory VC. So you can't split those things out. And it's that type of creativity that is going to be really important to the person in that role. So if you have the chance to hire one, you should hire one that can do what you need to do today. And realize that what, back to that theme from the other day, from our talk a few weeks ago, what got you there won't necessarily get you to the next step. So you're going to have to, you know, act for today, not act for the next 100 years. And that's counter to many, you know, leadership philosophies. It's counter to many HR philosophies, but I'll tell you, it is right in the wheelhouse for those organizations. They know they need to do what it takes to stay alive for another 6 months or a year. And then they will adjust and shift. You'll see those multiple ranges of, you know, multiple arcs of people and staffing and different types of people, different characteristics of people to get the companies through different phases. So yes and no, but I think in the place where VCSOs are tending to find the strongest opportunities, they're not necessarily ready for the tomorrow candidate. So I wouldn't wait. for to hire the one person I need for the person, you know, in while waiting for somebody else to be able to craft their team. I can advise and say, this is who you need now. And knowing that they're not going to be the person you need in 2 years.
So in your opinion, who makes a good VC so then for the small 50 to 100 person company or looking to get into a fractional VC so role, or if you're a value-added reseller looking to hire a VC so because you need to be able to provide it, who makes a good VC so? And then I'm going to follow that up with,
well, I want to table that question for just a minute because I want to take a flip side to this whole thing. Before we get to that, I want to talk about the inexperienced VC so and some of the value that comes from new ways of looking at things. You know, the three of us are, well, the two of us are crusty old information security. You know, I was debating with a friend of mine the other day. I can't stand the word cyber. I will not change that. I just won't incorporate it into my lexicon. If I could give that to the Web3 vest heads, I'd be happy to do so. They can take cyber and I want crypto back. but there's something to be said for fresh perspectives. There's something to be said for people who haven't been through it all and can look at it with a brand new set of eyes and can give organizations that are also, again, many of these organizations are small and innovating and wrecking the the historical norms in the spaces that they're working in. So do they benefit from a completely fresh set of unvarnished, untarnished information security perspectives? And then we'll come back to yours, Ryan, because I want to talk about this side first, and then we can get into what makes the good VC so.
Well, I don't think we can lump new perspective into a single category. I think you got to further delineate, right? Because there's a difference between coming in with no practical experience, no tangential experience, and then having some of that and trying to help an organization, right? Because I don't want to make the conversation age-based or, you know, you have to be in the field X number of years before you can do this. No, I really do think there is... We need new perspective. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, on that exact same conversation or what you mentioned about cyber, my perspective is starting to change on that terminology because I've always been hard set that it's information security and cyber.
Cyber's diminutive. It's a tiny little subset of real, of the bigger security scope.
But it's like the certain definitions of words that evolve based on common usage over time.
And yeah, but I also stump for the Oxford comma and will until the day I die.
You curmudgeon, you.
That's right. I'm a grammarian and long live the Oxford comma. And use semicolons, people, please. Properly.
Too funny. But no, I think there's got to be a realization, right? If you've got that tangential experience and you're coming in, I think the creativeness, the new perspective is great for an organization, because this is one of the problems that I keep having with a lot of our frameworks that are very prescriptive, and the prescriptive nature of our frameworks, as soon as they get published, they're out of date, right? As practitioners, we all have different ways to solve for the same risk objectives of the organization. I'm not saying they're all right. I'm not saying they're all wrong. They're just different, right? We take different paths to get there. That if you told us, hey, we've all got to drive to Traverse City tomorrow or drive to Florida, actually drive to South Carolina where I just went to vacation. My parents took a different route than we took, right? Both got us there roughly the same time frame. Neither one was right or wrong. They were just different. And the same thing happens in security, right? So I think that new perspective helps us get out of this mindset that I've been doing this so long, this is the way it's got to be done.
Right.
That we've got to have that influx of new ideas, new perspectives to keep us relevant to the evolution. And look, I mean, Brian can attest to this being on the vendor side of things. So I think he's on the vendor side of things. We've heard that before. But the breakneck pace of technology and how it's evolving allows us to treat risk differently and do it from a different perspective. And I think having that influx of new people helps us keep that in perspective and understand the changes in tools that are at our disposal.
And this also goes to the technology side too, when you're introducing new technologies and the risk associated with that. Because I'm going to go back to automotive just for a second. When you're looking at a manufacturing process and you're talking about the way we've done things for a long period of time. This meets the requirements for DFEMA, PFEMA from a process standpoint, design standpoint. If we start to add in more automation, we're inherently introducing more risk to our process failure mode analysis, right? That this is something new that we're not used to, even though it's going to improve cycle times. What is the risk, right? What other pokey oaks do we need to add to ensure that this process doesn't stop inevitably the entire line? But I can remember back when I was in automotive, a lot of the younger engineers that we brought in had learned about all these new laser weld robotic processes and were really trying to push it. But it was the older quality managers that were very much concerned with introducing it, right? So there was a learning curve there in building trust. And I think inherently that's the same thing in the security side, Eric, as you're looking at new tools to bring in or new ways of looking at things, there's also the risk side of it too. This is security, bringing in new types of technologies, whether it's your CIO or the business, inherently what's the risk, right? So it's trying to identify those things, and there's different perspectives, different sides of the coin, but being open to it, right? And having the discussion is what leadership is, whether it's right. The CIO, the CISO, or a fractional CISO that's gotten to see that at different organizations, what worked, what hasn't worked, right? So he can advise. The more times you're exposed to that, the more times you get to touch the water. And that's where experience from someone that's advised 4, 5, 6 different companies could come in and be able to look at your organization right away and tell you, well, just so you know, I understand the path you're going down, but I've seen this and this is where it does fail. So if we're going to go down that path, I recommend we change this or do this first to see if that works, because it still might fail.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with failing.
Failing is good.
And this is where I think about from a young practitioner coming in, there has to be an element of humility to recognize you don't know everything. You know, to use a simple example, if I was to ask the question, have you blocked FTP outbound, right? That a lot of people would be, well, we've
got firewall. What's FTP?
File transfer protocol.
Oh, no. I'd take somebody new in the field today might not actually know what FTP is.
That is possible. But so FTP goes over what, TCP 21?
21, 22.
So it somebody looking at it from a perspective could say, well, we've got a firewall, we've blocked those ports. Cool. But what if I tunnel it over 443, which is HTTPS. Allowing that out of firewall just because it's only based on ports. Well, no, you actually haven't stopped FTP until you get into layer 7 rules, or if you're doing some web filtering, there's some other aspects to it. But that is where experience comes in to realizing that there's way more to it than just changing a firewall rule. And that's where I think they're a young practitioner. It's great that they want to be in the field, that they want to help companies out. That's awesome. That's a great mentality. But find somebody, network, to find somebody that'll help you do it and provide some perspective and guidance who's been in the field for a while. Don't just try to go it on your own. There's just too much at stake.
Yeah. And I think one of the key pieces of that VCISO role, again, especially in smaller companies, is advising the board of directors and being able to make that transition. And by the way, this is the opportunity. I see huge opportunity for technology minded business executives that want to do this kind of thing. I actually see that as being a perfect move into this type of VC. So if you've got the technology experience or have people that can help advise you on it, I think the business side is as important to this as the, even in fact, even more important than the technology side of security in these VC. So roles for the small companies, because you're not only advising on how to configure things, and you'll likely have a technology director that can help with that. And most tech directors in smaller companies will have, or CTOs will have some idea of how to securely develop a tech stack. They'll want help and advice. But where the bulk of that VCISO time comes is talking to the board, is helping them understand their enterprise risk, helping customers understand and build confidence in the two guys in a garage company that you are at that point as to why they should trust their data in you at all. And then I think those are elements that are lost when you think about it as a purely technology function, but are a huge piece of what those kind of clients look to their fractional CISOs to help them with. It's a CFO, but for information security, and it's very different than configure this, change this, close right. FTP, or you know, make your AWS instance look like this.
You know, I think about in those roles that I look at talking to the board similar to talking to auditors, right? It's not just about knowing what to say, but it's equally as important knowing what not to say. That you can create ambiguity, gray areas, and confuse a situation and make it far worse than it actually is. And that a lot of that comes with experience. So let me pose this question. So as we think about fractional CISO, vCISO, we've got a new practitioner coming in that wants to take on this role. Is there an inherent issue in applying a fractional with the title CISO to a new practitioner coming in and what they're going to do for a small business? Is that okay? Or should there be a new term or new term? It just goes back to, well, it's security consulting.
Sure. Well, yeah, I think it's exactly it. It's a security consultant. You know, I've opened a security consultancy. I'm a security consultant. I think that we're seeing this as well in terms of certifications, and there's a whole other certification versus education versus experience discussion to be had, not today, but and maybe one we've had a couple of times already. But there's some work coming for a certified board information security representative. So there's some new requirements coming. I think this one comes from the SEC that requires that a board of directors have an information security aware, trained, and certified person as part of the board. That's coming. It's a forthcoming requirement. And so now the certifications are starting to happen around that. And that's not, that is where maybe we start to see that where that line is drawn between those that can use that particular title versus others. But coming back around to the point that was made earlier, insurance is saying you have to have, and they use the prescriptive term, you have to have a chief information security officer. And that is causing, I think, bad behaviors inside hiring organizations to fill the roles, either through grade, through title promotion, or just throwing somebody into that role. But it's also creating a vacuum of need, which I think is also spawning people, hey, I can make a ton of money, throw my name on this, and I can be a vCISO.
Yeah, and it's dangerous from a person. So the two aspects, right? It's dangerous from an organizational perspective, that if you get somebody in there that doesn't truly know what they're doing, but it's also very dangerous from a personal perspective, that you may elevate yourself to a position, a title, far greater than what you actually should be at, and you could stifle your career and any growth. That if there is anything that happens, I mean, granted, certain CISOs, it could be a black mark on your reputation if something happens to that organization and your name is associated with it. Now, there's a debate to be had there on the actual ramifications, because I'm now actually seeing organizations that one of the requirements, they're looking for a CISO that's been through a breach. So I don't know, maybe it's a badge of honor now, but
it is now,
it runs the potential. We've all seen this, and look at other areas within IT that people have been promoted past their level of competence. They plateau and they can't get out of that plateau. They get stuck in a position that they can't grow out of.
But, okay, well, two things. One, first, I need to counter your endless automotive references with some academic references. Need to offset all that manufacturing with some academics. The idea of grade inflation and social promotion for people in schools has been around for a long time, and we see some of the negative implications that come from it. You get through the end of high school and they come into university and they have absolutely no they don't have the skills necessary to be successful in university. And we have the same thing here where you have title promotion, title inflation, to the point where somebody in a role and then they go to the next role. And the expectation is, well, you've been a CISO for 5 years. Why don't you get this stuff? Well, because I didn't have the basics. I didn't have the fundamentals to be able to do that role correctly in the first place. But now I've got the experience, and that actually sets up a set of chain events down the road for those that hire. So even if you don't get stagnant, even if you do continue to grow, or continue to move in your career, you bring, I think, it's built on sand.
Right.
It has the opportunity to be built on sand. not everybody will fit that same model. You will have people who will truly learn and grow. They'll have organizations that support and give you the experience to be able to do that, even if you didn't have all of the experience coming in, because not every security, not every CISO is going to come up through application security or infrastructure security. It's just not that way anymore. And that's great. I love the diversity that's come with it, but the organization has to be ready to fill in the gaps, and the person has to be ready to fill in the gaps as they go and grow. Now, to the question you asked around, you mentioned about going beyond or the get stagnant. In a CISO role, what is beyond the CISO role that that builds on? Oh. You know, there is some thought that it is a terminal role.
Yeah, that sounds like episode 42.
Life well, after CISO.
So one thing I was going to add to that. Years. So what is continue to go out there and network, right? And going back to what Eric said, because if you're a company, whether it's a 10 person, 50 person, you name it, and you're looking for a VCISO, ask somebody their opinion on who do you think would make a good VCISO. And they probably know of a company or a person that's already doing that role, mm-hmm. who they've talked to and has advised them, right? So it's that reference, right? Sure. And referenceability.
How I got all my business in that world was references, was experience and reference.
Right. Now, also, and this was something I know we were messaging back and forth about. If you're someone that's been in a role as a manager, director in security, and spent 10 years, 15 years, very technical as an analyst and move your way up to help build processes, right? The act of building a process or part of a program out is exactly what a VCISO or fractional CISO is going to be doing from the standpoint of advising a company. They're looking for someone that knows how to do that. So just because you didn't have the CISO title, the work that you did in helping build out processes and put rules in place, hold people accountable, right? So think about that. You know, if you came from the audit side of the house and made it into the security side of the house, right? There was a gentleman we were just out to eat with the other night that talked about how literally for a very large company, the security side of the house used the audit side of the house to help drive rules to be put in place to adhere to better security practices.
Right. Yeah.
So you may be able to go into that organization that really wants to have better security and say, well, here's what I would recommend, and start to use this as the reason to build on, right? The audit side to build on why we need to put these things in place. And the rest will start to follow, and we'll put processes in there that make sense to the business, right? So I'm kind of going on twofold here. What comes next for someone in that role? Network, because you never know where you're going to end up next. And two is, if you've been in a role, right, as a manager or practitioner that's helped build processes, you very much could be a great advisor. So don't sell yourself short, and maybe talk to people as a form of networking of, right, I really would like to do this again, but I don't know the first step in doing it. And they may be able to advise you as well.
I think that's actually, that kind of points out there's other paths as well.
Yes.
Moving into a technical advisory role. Look, not everybody should want to become a CISO. It's a completely different path. Like, this is conversation.
No, with an emphatic no.
Yeah.
Most people don't want to be and shouldn't want to be. It's not the role that you think. It's not just making the rules and pounding your fist.
Right. Yeah. But I've had this conversation with a number of people that are in the technology field, heavy technologists, and kind of talking them through. I go, so you love technology, right? But you want to move up. I go, do you realize that as you make that transition, you have to start letting go some of that technical, and now you're focused on strategy, connecting people, as Dan talked about. You're talking about talking to the board. You're talking at a much higher level, connecting within the organization to help the organization understand the importance of security and how security can be a catalyst for other aspects of the business. So you, not saying you completely detach yourself from the technical, but you have to be willing that you're not going to go as deep as often in the technology, and all of a sudden, I really like technology. I want to stay that route. And that's fine. That's fine. There's avenues to continue down that path. So it's the point of the importance of self-reflection and understanding on number one, what do you not know to get where you need to be, right? What got you here, mm-hmm. what gets you there, but also where do you really want to be? What is your end goal? What is it you want to achieve? And what does that job look like? And then you start charting that path forward.
Right. And there's a whole suite of topics. We've said this time and time and time again, there's way more to information security than just tech. There's lots of different avenues. I'll point back to that CISO. What is the world of the CISO mind map? I'll link it in the show notes again. Any one of those, this is like the complete set of topics that come into this world. If you have a basis in some of them, you can build out the capabilities in others and be well prepared to advise companies. But Brian, back to the question I parking lotted of yours around what does it take to be a good CISO, a good VCISO? It is, I think it's having a handle on multiple domains, because you're going to be the one person show. You're going to be the overarching advisor. And yes, you can bring in and surround yourself with people that can help advise you. I ask lots of people, lots of questions to help me in bolster areas or confirm ideas that I have when I'm doing VCISO or fractional CISO work. But there's this whole suite of things, and you don't have to be perfect at all of them. You don't have to only have come up through technology. There's lots of ways into this thing. But what there isn't, I think, is I just decided today I want to be a VCISO. Yesterday I was, I was the manager of a park, and I know a lot about running a park, but I don't know much about security. But I did install Norton antivirus yesterday. I think that there's a difference between that and saying I think I'm going to become a VCISO, and having had experience in the field, in some part of the field, in multiple parts of the field, and having the ability and the comfort to advise companies on what will become a huge topic for those companies. Realize how much you're putting of their future, they're putting into your hands. And I don't know that that's always clear to people when they make that decision. And if you have the capability to learn and grow, I say go for it. If you have the ability, if you have some experience that can bring you closer to what they need, go for it. But don't ever do it disingenuously. Don't ever do it with, I'm gonna fake that I have clients. As hiring managers, there's a lot of discussion about, oh, I see you left this job and started your own business for a while. Does that mean you were just unemployed? I think there's that, which I know a lot of people do, set up a company, set up an LLC in 30 seconds and use that to overcome a gap in employment. I think hiring managers should be more tolerant of gaps of employment. But it's unfortunately become a response to some of that hiring practice. I'm sure there's more on this soapbox, but I'll leave it for now.
No, because that could be a whole nother episode in itself, but I just wanted to touch on it, right? Because I'm sure there's people listening that, as you talk about where this conversation began around VCISO and fractional CISO, well, then who makes a good fractional CISO and a good VCISO? And I think the answer to that could be, well, really anybody, but understanding that the role that you're playing, right, is a very, very, very important role that does have consequences. It could have consequences for you in the long term, as well as the company and business that you're representing. Just remember that, right? It's like the same question you ask, well, who would make a good nanny, right? Like, it's, you're taking care of somebody's baby. That business is somebody's baby. It's not just a pet project, right? Like, there's people invest a lot of time, money. And as Eric, like you said, the role of a CISO is ever changing as new rules, requirements come into place. It's one of the reasons I really love the local Black Harbor security guys, because the whole role of vehicle security is entirely new.
It's another area. Yep.
Right. And it's being able to advise these very, very large corporations that are like giant shipping vessels. In order to get them to turn, they see the turn coming, but they have to start way back there in order to get the ship to be able to make the turn, because they're big, big businesses, right? But the same could be said of a small business. Even though they're able to turn quickly, advising them when to turn, how to turn, right, is just as important, so they're not crashing into a wall.
And I don't think this is unique to us, right? I think if we were to go back a ways, that I would imagine you had some of the same conversations, albeit not on a podcast, around some of the financials and finance and kind of the whole accounting realm changing, right? That if we look pre-SOX, pre-Enron and all of that, that some of the entry points that I could advise a small company on how to handle some of their financials and how they should do things. And then the game changed, right? The stakes were higher now because there's accountability for how are you doing your accounting principles or how are you doing your accounting for the business and what that looks like. So not unique to us. I think we're just the current field that's in the lens of evolution and trying to, as we look at, you know, governments and other organizations trying to get their hands around, all right, where should the line of accountability be? What should the ramifications be when accountability is not there or when things go awry? It's just the latest in the evolution of business and business risk.
Yeah. And considering, I'll just convey, we're getting close to the end of the hour, so I'll end with a story just around the impact that comes from this. Increasingly, as I spend a lot of time in the VC, in the private equity world, and companies that are taking security on into their organization early are seeing much better return when they go to exit. There's value that comes from investing in information security early in your startup, early in your company growth. And the VCs and PEs are looking at your security status when deciding how to value the deals they want to do with you, either as an investment or as an acquisition. And there's two sides to it. You know, you can bring in, if you're the VC, so in a smaller company that is looking for that kind of an exit or looking for your next round of investment, know that you are going to get scrutinized when you go through that diligence process, because this is an industry that now understands far better what it means to take on this kind of risk. So realize that if you don't have the experience or if you don't have the capability to take on and acquire it in a timely manner, that you're going to hit the moment of truth much sooner than you would in, let's say, a public organization where you're waiting for a breach to happen. And that would be the moment when the flashlight would shine onto the organization. In smaller organizations, that happens more frequently. It happens at funding rounds. It happens at revaluation rounds. It happens at insurance rounds. And the insurance companies are looking very closely now. I'm in the middle of filling out a whole new set of insurance questionnaires for the company I'm part of. And we're doing that review. And it's way deeper than it ever has been. When you go to get acquired or go to get some kind of an exit, there is also, you know, pretty heavy review of your security posture. And it's not just what I say it is. You know, it's not just what I claim it is. It's what some actual review. So know that there's going into this, know what you're getting into when doing it. And if you're comfortable doing it, then great. But also realize that there's some implications to doing so. Gentlemen, Eric, Brian, thank you again for another great security debate. This is a good one. And thanks to you, the listener. We really appreciate you being here, and we appreciate even more your feedback. You can send us your feedback by email, feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net, or find us on Twitter @securitydebate. You can find us on YouTube. We have a video version of this podcast. If you're listening right now in the car and you want to see the crazy faces that we pull when somebody else makes a ridiculous comment, you can see it on video. Go to YouTube and search for Great Security Debate. Or if you happen to be watching this on video and you want to hear it while you're driving to work or driving around town, you can find us in your favorite podcast application. Just search for Great Security Debate. Our website is www.greatsecuritydebate.net, and we will see you again on the next Great Security Debate.